This is good.
Belts and City be late, so. All right, that means Deuteronomy 34, right? Transfiguration, one of the greatest Sundays in the church year. You move from light to darkness, Epiphany to Lent, top of the mountain, down to the plain. All those themes are really, plus again, it's sort of the climax, bringing to conclusion the whole theme of the revelation of who this Jesus is. Now, Deuteronomy 34, of course, brings to end the life of Moses, and is here primarily because of the appearance of Moses on the Mount of Transfiguration, where we have Moses and Elijah, who are sort of the epitome of the personification of the Old Testament, Moses and the prophets. So Jesus, I mean, that's the whole sort of symbolism of that scene, is that Jesus there is part and parcel in the third piece, if you will, to biblical history, Moses, the prophets, and now the full revelation in the incarnate Christ. This is quite remarkable who this person is. So here we get to the end of Moses, and it's not just sort of plugging into the life of Moses and his rather mysterious death, or at least the place or the fact that his grave is unknown, but his whole role as a prophet like whom there has not been another. And maybe we'll talk about that at the end. But let's plow through the text. 34, verse 1. V'yal Moshe me arvoth Moav el Har Nevo, Rosh HaPisgah. Well, you got a few place names here, and this gets a little hairy, just trying to figure out where these are. Now, with most place names, if you just transliterate them, you're not going to be too far from getting it right. V'ya'al, but first, a verb form. V'ya'al, kal imperfect, while consecutive, third hey root, Allah. Third hey is gone. And he went up. Subject Moshe. Moses went up from the Arvoth Moav. Arvoth really means a low place. The Arabah is the rift valley of the Jordan and then technically even south of the Dead Sea. Here in the plural, it just sort of, who knows exactly the technical meaning of these terms. You could say the plains of Moab or the deserts of Moab or the depression of Moab, something like that. From the plains of Moab, El Har Nevo, to Mount Nebo, or Har Nevo, which does stand as kind of the high peak overlooking the Jordan Valley and the north end of the Dead Sea. It's quite a view from up on top. If you go there, they'll take you up and let you look. You can see for miles. Rosh HaPisgah, the head of the Pisgah, whatever this is, top of the Pisgah. Maybe here Pisgah means something like mountain range. The general suggestion is that this is a word for ridge. Like we might use the word ridge. Which is Asher al Panei Yericho, which is upon the face of Jericho, literally. Upon the face of. Here probably in the sense of opposite, in the same idiom that to stand to someone's face means to stand in front of him. We would say facing Jericho. V'yar Ehu. Now, us beginning Hebrew guys, look at this form, all right? We haven't done this yet, but we're right on the edge. Yar Ehu. First of all, what do you notice? Imperfect wow consecutive. That's a dead giveaway. You got the wow, you got a yod. Now you got a pathak under the yod. That should be the sign of a hiphil. Right, we just introduced this. Now the root is, of course, the irregular third hey root, ra'ah, which is gone. The third hey is gone. You have a suffix with a hey in it, but that's a different hey from the root. this is the suffix ahu, which is the object suffix. Now, put all this together. You've got the subject, which is indicated by the yod, he. It's wow consecutive, so it's past tense. The verb is ra'ah in the hifil, and the object is ahu, which means him, the direct object, him. Ra'ah means to see, but in the hifil it means cause someone else to see. So translate it literally, and the subject is the next word, Yahweh. So Moses went up on a mountain, and Yahweh caused him to see eth kol ha'aretz, all the land. Now, I think this is this sort of explanatory eth, namely, Gilad al-Azdan. Namely, from the Gilad, Gilead is really the Transjordan plateau, that is east of the Jordan River. There is a bomb in Gilead. It's the fight song of the PLO. Gilead unto Dan. Dan, in its original place, was on the western edge, all right, toward the Sea of Mediterranean Sea. So this is the breadth of the land from east to west. And all, now we got more place names, Naphtali, and you can figure that out, Ve'eth Eretz in the land of Ephraim, you can figure that out, and Manasseh, Ve'eth Kol Eretz Yehuda, and all the land of Judah, Ad Hayom Ha'achron, until the sea, the western one, okay? The western one, which is, of course, the Mediterranean. Achron, remember, achar really means back, but your backside is always your west side, assuming that you're properly oriented, i.e. facing east. 3, Ve'eth HaNegev, and also the Negev. Now, you know where the Negev is? Here's where I get into a little geography. That's the southern desert. Really starts at Beersheba. And the Negev and the Kikar, the something of the face of, or the ridge, or whatever this means, of the valley of Jericho. The Bekah is the word for valley, Yereko we've had. The city of the Timurim, of the palms. Oh, it's nice to know. Palm Springs. LeYitzkach. No, I'm sorry, I skipped the line. Ad Zoar, unto Zoar, another place name. All right. You get the point here. He's kind of going through the whole land. Now, by the way, did Moses, can you see from Mount Nebo all the way to Dan? Of course not. All right. But he's pointing this out in kind of a broad spectrum. I guess you could argue that he's causing Moses to see this sort of in the eyes of faith. But what's really interesting about this is he's describing the land according to the places in the tribal allotments that had yet to take place, which is kind of assuming the conquest, which hasn't happened yet. So, I mean, the whole point of this is showing Moses the promised land in the sense that it's going to become their land. So it's linking this to the immediate future into the next generation. Now I lost my place. 4, Vayomer Yahweh Elau, and Yahweh said to him, Zoth Haaretz, this the land. This is the land, Asher, which Nishbati, I Shavat, Shavad in the Niphal. Shavah uses the Niphal, it means to swear or promise. Which I swore, you see the T ending, which I swore, La Avraham, La Yitzchak, Ve'u Le Yaakov. Three more names you should recognize. Quote, Labor. Here's what he said to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Lizaraka, to your Zera. Zera is the word for seed. To your seed. Etenena. Look at that. Is that a mouthful? You want to parse this one? This is the imperfect of Nathan. The Aleph is imperfect prefix. the first nun of Nathan is gone. It's the assimilated Dagish in the Tau. Then you've got eten plus enna, which is this energic form of the object suffix that goes on imperfects. Enna is feminine. Literally, this says, I will give her. Huh? What's the her? It's the eretz, right? This, to your seed, I will give it. That is the land. Her ethika. Her, notice the E vowel here. It's a little irregular. It's not a herik, but a segol. The root is ra'ah, third hey. This is the hifil perfect of ra'ah with the T ending. I cause to see, and the object suffix is plugged on the end. Ka, I have caused you to see. B aneka, with your eyes. And, though here's a great case where the wow has to be contrastive, but shama, sham is the adverb there. The unaccented comma's hey is directive hey. To there, thither, where that's still used. Thither, lo ta'avor, you will not avar, cross over. Okay? I mean, preach a relational sermon here. If you were Moses, what would your reaction to all this be? You know, after all this, and then he shows it to him. He's just teasing him. Shows him the whole land and says, here it is. This is the fulfillment of the promise, but you're not going. You fulfilled your ministry, and that's all you're ever asked to do anyway. Leave it to the next generation. 5. V'yamoth sham. Interesting, the very next thing that happens now in the narrative, we're back to the wow consecutive of the narrative, we're out of the direct discourse. V'yamoth sham, and he died there. Yamoth is the Kal of Muth. Moses did. Moses, the Eved Yahweh, the servant of Yahweh, Be'eretz Moav, in the land of Moab, I'll pee according to the mouth of Yahweh. Remember, P for pay, construct, according to the mouth of Yahweh. 6. V'yikbor otho. And he, the subject now must be Yahweh. There's no other he around. And he kavard otho him. Kavar means to bury. You can always remember it because it sounds like cover. And he kavard, buried him, in the Gai, that's a valley. Gai is rather a steep ravine-type valley. In the valley, in Eretz Moav. Mul is another preposition that means opposite. Opposite Beth Peor, place name. Beth Peor, where they had this terrible orgy of pagan fertility cult. One of the worst sins they did right on the edge of the promised land. Opposite Beth Peor, V'lo yada ish, and a man has not known, or does not know, a man has not known, eth kivuratho. Now what's a kivura? You could probably guess this from the verb kavar, to bury. A kivura is a grave. Kivuratho, his grave. And no one has known his grave, ad hayom hazeh, until the day, the this one, until this day. 7. U Moshe, now we get the summary on Moses. U Moshe ben, and Moses, ben me'ah v'esrim shana. This is the idiom for your age. You're the son of so many years. That's just Hebrew idiom. You're the son of 21 years or whatever. And Moses was the son of Me'ah, means 100. Esrim, Eser means 10. The plural of 10 is 20. The son of 120 year. Bimotho, in his death. Moth from Maoth, in his death. Lo kahitha eno. Kahatha is third hey from a verbal root kaha, kaf hey, hey, that means to be weak. The subject is I, eno, interesting enough, it's singular. And not his eye became weak, and not nas lecho, and his lech, leach means strength, usually manly strength. We might say virility, I guess. Here's an example of an old ending O. This is the pronominal suffix O, marked with a hey, not a wow. There's a few of these left in the language. Originally, that pronominal suffix was marked with a hey. So, interesting that eino and lecho have the same suffix, but one's written with a wow and one's written with a hey. This is lost to the great mystery of Matres Lectionis, about which yet even more dissertations will no doubt be written. And not his virility, nas. Nas is the kal perfect of the hollow root nous, which means to literally flee or run away. His strength had not fled, gone away from him. So he died yet a strong and didn't need glasses, I guess. His eye. You know, that sort of becomes the code for old age when you start getting a little bit decrepit, but that's very true. I mean, almost anyone, you'd be lucky to get past 45 without needing glasses, not to mention 120. And this almost becomes a standard way of saying a guy's getting older. And for someone not to have dimmed eyes, remember Eli the priest? No, yeah, and who am I thinking of? Jacob's father, right? Jacob and Esau, when they pulled a trick on him. That is very typical. And remember, this is a culture that doesn't know how to grind lenses. So this is pretty common stuff. Anyway, so this is sort of stands out as remarkable. 8. Vayivku. And, boy, you want to parse yivku? That one you should be able to do. This is from the third hey, baka, to cry tears. And they wept, the B'nai Yisrael did. And they, now note it takes a direct object. And they wept eth Moshe, and they cried for Moses. Wept Moses, we could say mourned. Though frankly, this isn't the technical term for mourning. It's just the simple word for crying tears. They cried Moses in the Arboth Moab, in the plains of Moab. Shiloshim Yom, another number. Shalosh means three. The plural of three is 30. You take the number and multiply it by 10 for the plural. And they mourned Moses in the plains of Moab 30 day, and yit tamu. And they were finished. Tamam is a geminate verb to be done, to be complete. And the yamei of the beki of the avil of Moshe was completed. It's kind of a four-bagger construct chain, I think. Beki we've had, the weeping of. Now, avil is a technical term for mourning for somebody's death. M-O-U-R-I-N-G. So the days of the crying of the mourning of Moses were completed. 9. Vihoshua. Note the fronting of the subject here. We don't start the next sentence with wow consecutive. We're new paragraph. It's almost like, and now we start a new chapter in holy history. And Joshua ben Nun, son of Nun, son of Nun. You didn't know nuns had children, did you? And Joshua, the son of Nun, Male, was full of Ruach Chokmah, a spirit of Chokmah, wisdom. Why? Ki Samach Moshe, Moses had, Samach is used for laying on of hands. It's almost technical term for laying on of hands. It's used with Yad, as it is here. Because Moses had laid his hands on him, and They listened to him, the Bnei Yisrael did, and the sons of Israel listened to him. I mean, you could do a little, that's always a nice little words or a term paper on laying on of hands. And here is part of the ordination rite. Here it's passing sort of the public sign of passing the office on to the next person. That's essentially why this is still done in ordinations. And the sons of Israel listened to him. V'yasu, and he did according to Tziwa what Yahweh commanded Moses. So he's carrying on what Yahweh commanded Moses. 10. 10's a key verse. V'lo kam navi oth b'Yisrael k'moshe. And not has arisen, kam from kum, a navi oth, yet, b'Yisrael, in Israel, k'moshe, like Moses. What's so distinctive about Moses? Asher yidda'o Yahweh. Ooh, yidda'o. Kal, perfect, third singular masculine, with object suffix. So it's who Yahweh knew him. That pronoun tells you that the asher is the direct object. Whom Yahweh knew, panim el panim, face to face. This is what's distinctive about Moses. What else did he do? Lakol, according to, or in regards to, I think this is now sort of explaining this knowing God face to face. It's not just that he went up on the mountain, but that he also mediated God's presence in action. And according to all the othoth and the mofatim, signs and wonders. Oath is the word for sign. Probably these are the closest Hebrew words to things like supernatural occurrences, what we would call miracles. Signs and wonders, which Shilacho Yahweh, same form, which Yahweh sent him, Shilacho, Lasoth, infinitive construct, to do, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, in the land of Egypt, Leparo, to Pharaoh, Ulakol Evadao, and to all his servants, Ulakol Arzo, and to all his land. Pharaoh, his servants, and his land. And verse 12, now this Lamed parallels the Lamed at the beginning of verse 11, and with reference to all the Yad Chazakah, and with reference to all of the, or the whole mighty arm, or sorry, mighty hand, strong hand, and to all the Morah HaGidolah, the great awe. You can see Morah has as its root the verb Yare, to be afraid. Something that inspires awe. If awesome or awful wasn't completely sort of ripped of its original meaning, you could still use words like that. And concerning all of the great fearfulness, terrible, awesome stuff, Asher Asa Moshe, which Moses did, Le'ene Kol Yisrael, to the eyes of all Israel. Do you notice verse 11 talks about what happened to Pharaoh, his servants and all his land, i.e. Egypt. Verse 12 describes it in terms of a mighty hand and a terrible, awesome, great deed, which Moses did to the eyes of Israel. So you got Egypt in verse 11, Israel in verse 12. We can switch to the gospel here, but let me wrap up a couple of thoughts. First of all, this whole business of Moses, who is now bringing to completion a major stage of holy history. We're on the edge of the promised land, but of course we aren't quite there yet. So do you feel the already not yet tension here? We've come a long way, baby, from Egypt. And it was done by the hand of God with signs and wonders by his servant Moses, who was the mediator and knew God face to face in this special relationship. God's grace mediated through the office of the ministry. That's already happened, but we're not there yet. See, we're ready for the next stage. And this whole second item now, which is the distinctness of Moses being a prophet like whom there hasn't been, and they're still waiting for him. Now, they're still waiting for the prophet to show up for the entire rest of the Old Testament. Who will be a prophet like Moses? And you get little snippets of that in the Gospels when people go around talking about Jesus as, is this the prophet who is to come? And that's all the playing out of these expectations of Christ, not only as the priest who is yet to come, or the Davidic messianic king who is yet to come, but also of the prophet who is yet to come. And they're kind of looking for all this threefold office, you see, are all there in the Old Testament, but they're three distinct offices. And, of course, when Christ comes, you get it all wrapped up in one. And now we've got the one not just who knows God face to face, but in whom we see God face to face. Well, there's some transfiguration thoughts. Okay, where are we going? Luke.